Welcome to Buy Sci-Fi Bite-Sized Finance. I'm Kelly Brothers. I'll be your host, serving up some of the most succulent stories from our region about people, places, and things that impact our community and your financial well-being. I'm sure there will even be a few tasty surprises here and there when the recipe is right. Our goal is to have you learn, think, even laugh a little bit, all calorie-free. I know you'll enjoy what we're delivering right to your kitchen table or dining room or, sir, will you be eating in your car? Wherever you choose to listen. Kelly Brothers back with another edition of Bite Sized Finance. You can find this podcast wherever you get your podcasts or KFBK every Sunday, 3 p.m. I want to thank my guest today, the one and only Mark Haney, a podcaster himself, and maybe kind of the greatest advocate for entrepreneurship in the greater Sacramento area. Mark Haney, thanks so much for joining me.
I am honored to be here, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
So, tell me the backstory, Mark. I mean, we're going to get into the various businesses you have, the growth factory, the backyard. We're going to get into all that. But where'd you grow up and what sparked initially your interest in entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I grew up in Roseville and I live in Loomis today, so I haven't gone too far. But I think what sparked my interest in entrepreneurship, it began even as a little kid. My brother and I had a newspaper route that we ended up auctioning off as we moved to across town. We later got into video stores and exited video stores, got into security cameras. So we always seemed to own our own business. And so when we sold our companies, we had five security camera companies in 2010, 2011. What am I going to do with my life? You know, kind of thing happened for me. And so I wrote a mission statement, and that mission statement was all around creating opportunity. And where better to create opportunity than in entrepreneurship?
So let's go back to the paper route, because I'll tell you what, that was an underrated entree into the business world if you were 12, 13, 14 years old. I had multiple paper routes and so many lessons to be learned in a darn paper route, Mark.
Yeah, we had the Sacramento Union. I was volunteering to help my buddy Andy Boss, who was getting ready to go into high school. I was helping him voluntarily with his route, the Sacramento Union. Well, you probably remember that back in the day. And one day he asked me if I wanted his route. And I said, well, let me go home and ask my mom. I was in the fourth grade. And I went home and asked my mom, Mom, can I have a paper route? And she said, heck no, you're in the fourth grade. Next thing you know, the newspapers were on my front porch at 0:30. It was like, you know, we opened the door. It was like, well, I guess I got myself a paper out.
Man, I started out with the B, and when I started, it was an afternoon paper, and then it became a morning paper. So I transitioned with the paper to go from afternoons to mornings.
That was a heavy paper. Ours was a little bit lighter. So if you had a good arm, you could actually throw the newspaper and get it on the porch, most of the time.
Oh, I broke a few windows. I broke a few windows. And when I say broke a few windows, I wasn't that bad of a thrower. But some of these people on J Street, I remember one lady, she was a lovely older lady, and she had a little tiny kind of flower balcony on the outside of her second story window. And she wanted me to throw the paper up there. So every day I threw the paper up into that little balcony. And one day, I don't know if you remember, but when you folded it, there was that hard corner. There was a corner on that was hard.
Yeah.
And it hit the glass and the whole thing shattered and all the glass flew in. And she was asleep on the couch underneath the glass.
Oh.
And I thought she was going to be as mad as a hornet. She came down and said, that's a tough throw. Are you kidding me? You've done it for a year and a half. One broken window isn't going to stop it. Keep doing it. So, but that was, I just thought it was, you know, the responsibility.
What's the lesson? What's the lesson there? Yeah.
Yeah. But the responsibility, Mark, to have your, you know, whether it was raining or sunny, whether you were feeling good or feeling sick, you had to get the papers out. And that, or, you know, if you're going on vacation, you had to arrange for someone to fill in for you. And then you had to go around every month and collect the money. It was great entrepreneurship training, really.
It was. And, you know, you talk about lessons that we learned as little kids. I think one of the lessons that was reinforced for me at that time was, if we want to win in life or in business, we need to create ourselves an edge, an advantage. And so my brother and I, we ended up getting a customer complaint and we strategized on, okay, how could we tweak our efforts so that we actually don't get any complaints and we get tips at the end of the month when we go around to collect. And we came up with the idea of in-home delivery, where you lean the newspaper up against the front door, and then when the customer opens the door, it actually falls in the house. In-home delivery. And we actually kicked the Sacramento Bee's butt in our neighborhood, Kelly, even though you guys were the dominant paper in town at the time.
Well, it was, I don't know, I enjoyed it also kind of, as I used to tell people when I was on Channel 3 and doing news on KFBK, I've been delivering the news in this town since I was 13 years old because I was delivering a paper. Yes. I remember my dad telling me one time, Mark, it was New Year's Eve, and I was going to go out. I thought about going out collecting. He said, if I were you, I'd go. He said, this could be a really good time. And I went out at probably 5 o'clock on New Year's Eve. Everyone had a drink or two into them. Everyone was happy. I got more tips that night than I did any other night of the year. And nice. It was a good lesson. You got to hit people up for money when they're in the mood to hear the message, you know?
That's right. Follow that money.
That's right. But so you did that. Now, were you and your brother partners on this?
Yeah. So what happened is the paper route was given to me. And so then I hired my younger brother, Paul, to help me. He basically did all the work and I went around and collected all the money. It's kind of what we joked about. And then we ended up building some video stores and some security camera companies. And he and I remained partners throughout this whole thing. And I used to joke that that's the way we operate. So I would go out, you know, kind of get things rolling as a CEO, but then he would end up managing the money and he did most of the work.
So let me ask you this, on your route, did you have one of those front bags on a big route bike, or did you put the bag over your shoulder and kind of pull out the paper like that?
It was a front and back pack. So there you had papers in the front and papers in the back. So you stack quite a few Sacramento Unions and you could pull them from the back. And then when you know, you got to keep it balanced out, you pull from the front.
It was great. You know, and those jobs really don't exist anymore. Those jobs are, well, first of all, no one gets a paper anymore. Or very few do.
Yeah.
And those that do, it's usually not a job for a 14-year-old, and it really hasn't been replaced as being that entree to entrepreneurship, to having your own little business, because you bought the papers. So if you didn't collect, you lost. Not the company, you lost. And that was a great lesson to learn and I think built a lot of responsibility at an early age. So so you build up. So why did you go into security cameras? What was it about that business that drew you in?
By mistake, it ended up being a good business, but we had 12 video stores in Sacramento and we ended up loaning somebody some money. He was in a lawsuit with Panasonic and they were toward the tail end of the lawsuit and he asked to borrow some money. We loaned him some money. He kept coming back to the well and it was kind of I won't say get rich quick, but there was going to be a great return on the loan. He ended up losing the lawsuit with Panasonic and filing for bankruptcy. And so we had loaned him more than our net worth. We had borrowed money to loan to him to get paid back very quickly. So in the bankruptcy, we end up with this company. It's called Northern Video Systems. They really weren't even a security camera company, more like pro and broadcast. We actually sold to some of the case stations in town and to the government. But when we took that company out of bankruptcy, it ended up having a line of Sony security cameras. And then that stuff had higher margins than some of the broadcast stuff. And so we pivoted from professional video cameras and broadcast type stuff to security. And that's how it took off. And we finally made our money back on all the money we had loaned. It took a while.
I bet it did. So you were selling these Sony security cameras to commercial or residential or both?
It was all commercial. It started off selling to end users and some resellers. And then ultimately we built the largest independent security distributor in the country. We had a manufacturing company. We had a consulting company. We had a kind of an online catalog company where we sent millions of catalogs out. And then we also had an integration company that I still own today. We sold four out of the five companies in 2010-11 timeframe. But now we have a security camera company. We're the largest in the country when it comes to selling security cameras into casinos. You name a casino, chances are they've got our cameras.
Really? And you kept that company, huh?
We kept that company. My brother-in-law is the CEO of that company. So I'm more like a silent partner. My nieces and nephews all work there. It's, you know, we do business all over the country.
So talk to me about, so you're building this company and you're doing well, right? You're making money, you're getting bigger, you're pivoted toward the higher margin product, everything's lining up. What, tell me about the decision to exit. Tell me about the decision to sell.
Well, we had created what we thought was an advantage, right? That's all that my mentality is, all this, how do you create yourself an advantage? And so we had five companies that all sort of helped each other in a way, had synergy among each other. And so we had built something pretty special, but we had visions of what we called the billion-dollar dream. We were a couple hundred million in sales. Well, okay, it's the billion-dollar dream. Rallied the team around this concept of creating opportunity by having a larger organization. And I had met a man out of New York who had a company about our size, and we decided to merge the two companies together to create an even more powerful company. And simultaneously, we brought in private equity to help back us on this roll-up strategy. And I think that opportunity, it meant something to my brother and I, because we thought we'd be able to create more opportunity for our teammates. But also on my brother's front, his father-in-law had died, you know, so I think it reshaped the way my brother wanted to live out the rest of his life. We were in our mid-40s and he thought, you know, life is too short. It's time to take some chips off the table. So in that transaction, we were able to take some chips off the table, yet roll forward into a bigger entity.
What do you mean mid-40s? You're in your mid-40s now, Mark. Look at you. Look at you. If you haven't met Mark, he's one of those guys who just simply doesn't age. And it makes me sick, by the way. I mean, really, you look great. What it is. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
You too.
So you decided that was the time to exit. So we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Mark Haney, the Growth Factory, and how he took that exit and turned it into something bigger for others as well, not just for him and his brother and his family, but for others as well, becoming kind of the entrepreneurship evangelist of Northern California. You're listening to Bite Size Finance with Kelly Brothers every Sunday, 3 o'clock on KFBK or wherever you get your podcasts.
For over 40 years, Drobny Law Offices has been assisting clients properly plan their estates and administer the estate of a loved one. With 6 attorneys and 5 paralegals practicing exclusively in estate planning and estate administration, Drobny Law Offices can assist in planning and administering estates from the modest to the largest and most complicated. The main offices are in Sacramento with satellite offices in Stockton, Modesto, San Ramon, Palo Alto, San Diego, and Reno. Unlike attorneys who charge by the tenth of the hour, estate plans are done for a flat fee, including not just the document production, but funding the trust, annual review letters, and routine amendments for life. The attorney-client relationship doesn't end with the execution of your documents. It's just the beginning. Estate planning is an ongoing process. Call 916-419-2100 for a free initial consultation. Drobny Law Offices, your attorneys for life. DrobnyLaw.com.
Hello, this is Scott Thomas with CapTrust in our Sacramento office. I specialize in working with local nonprofits and associations. Annually, we survey private and public nonprofit organizations across the country to better understand challenges they see in today's environment. In our more recent survey, we heard concerns about proper board governance, mission-aligned investment, and how to implement alternative investments. If you would like a copy of the survey or to discuss your organization, look me up, Scott Thomas at CapTrust.com.
Back again on Bite Size Finance with Mark Haney of the Growth Factory, the entrepreneurship evangelist for all this part of California. We were talking with Mark about his early life, about the paper route, about the first big company that he built, and then the exit. And Mark, that's where I want to pick it up. Okay, so you have this exit. It's a major liquidity event, I am sure, for you and your family and your brother. How did you go about in your own mind deciding, okay, what mountain do I want to climb now?
Yeah, so we stayed with the company through a transition process, and my brother ended up retiring. He's become a very good golfer, and I wasn't quite ready to shut it off. And I decided I wanted to write a personal mission statement because that might guide me. And so I didn't really know how to do that, but the mission statement that we had for our businesses was very effective. So I figured if I had a personal mission statement, that would be effective in helping me figure out that next, you know, phase of my life. So I did something called an Ikigai. I don't know if you've ever heard of that or not. It's kind of like discovering your calling. So I did this exercise. It's the intersection of four things: what you're good at, what you love, what the world needs, and what you could get paid for. And I had decided that the intersection of that for me was around creating opportunity. And I didn't really know what I was going to do on that front, but opportunity for my family, my friends, and my community. And as they succeed, I succeed. And I think what really prompted me down this path of helping other entrepreneurs was the decision to join the Entrepreneurs Organization. That I joined that shortly after we had that exit.
Go into the, how do you say that again?
It's called Ikigai.
Ikigai.
Starts with an I. Yeah, it starts with an I.
Is that a long process? Is that a long discernment process?
I did it myself with my dry erase board. So that was the first thing I bought after leaving my company. It's like, I need to get a dry erase board for my home office. And so I just did a lot of scratching and, you know, on the, you know, penciling out stuff on my dry erase board. And the one thing that I realized, I began to use that dry erase board more, there's another Japanese term. We did a lot of business in Japan, by the way. So that's where, you know, I dealt with Panasonic and Sanyo and Sony, part of our business. But another Japanese term that my security camera companies represented for me was a Keiretsu. And you may have heard that term before. It's a family of companies that have common ownership, and it creates this advantage for them because they have extra buying power or influence or what have you. Like Sanyo and Panasonic had some, you know, overlap in ownership. And there's other Japanese companies that are like that are sizable. And so our security camera companies were like this mini Keiretsu. Okay, I'm going to create a Keiretsu for Sacramento companies. And so I started talking about this on my podcast that I would have 100 millionaire business partners in my backyard that all love each other. And that really started to become talked about in and among my circles. And people that had heard me speak of this is, I want to be in the backyard, Mark. I want to be in the backyard. And that really is what started, some of the stuff that I'm working on today is, you know, that vision of these millionaire business partners that all love each other.
And has it panned out?
Yeah, what happened is I had this big party in my backyard where I sort of explained the vision to my portfolio founders and some of the people that had helped me along the way. It was in 2019, and I had invested into roughly 50 local companies. And it might have been, you know, like restaurants and construction companies and, you know, a mixture of tech companies. And I just kind of had this little collection of entrepreneurs in my backyard that I invested into. A couple of people that had co-invested alongside me. And what happened was I started sharing that vision at that party. Next thing you know, COVID hits. And so a lot of the things that I was doing with my podcast, we do it in person, that I was doing investing and my events, it all got put on hold. And I was sort of in that, I had flashbacks of actually 2008, you know, the financial crisis, like, oh my gosh, the world's, you know, what's going to happen financially for everybody. But during that COVID time, that's when we decided to launch the Growth Factory. And that's really when everything changed. And the backyard party, the backyard advantage that I had built for my business partners took on a life of its own that is really, you know, exciting for, I think, all of Sacramento and I think potentially all of America.
So walk us through the components of the Growth Factory, because you wanted to form this Keiretsu, which is multiple different companies under one roof. But that obviously, I think that you hope that fledgling entrepreneurs would have a one-stop shop, just where they could go in and get three or four different things they need from people who wanted them to succeed. Is that right?
I think that's part of it, but a lot of it is the love component, where people want to help each other, right? Showing love to one another, it's an advantage, right? You can open up doors and engineer wins for one another. And so that's really what the what the premise was all about. And it started with my portfolio of companies. And then when we decided to launch the Growth Factory is actually got two sides to it. We're an entrepreneurial development organization with an accompanying venture capital arm. And with that is this culture of love, helping each other. And that's what we call the backyard advantage. And instead of it being just my backyard, it's the collective backyard of the Sacramento region. We have 100 plus investors. We have corporate partners with people like the Sacramento Kings, Moneta Venture, people that you know, Kelly, very well, GSEC, a number of corporations in town, as well as municipalities like the City of Rockland, City of Roseville, El Dorado County, and others are coming together because they understand that entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They're the ones that take the risks, make the sacrifices, you know, create the opportunity and figure out a way to change the world. And that's good for Sacramento, right? It's been good for America for hundreds of years. It's also good for Sacramento, but we have been overlooked over the last several years when it comes to venture capital and on entrepreneurship in many ways. So if we can have successful startups here in Sacramento, we actually attract other people's money into our backyard, which makes it us a lot stronger.
No, there's a momentum component to it, isn't there? Where once you start to have success, hey, pick out one of the companies, Mark, pick out just one of the companies that you have shepherded over the years or invested in or shown the love to. And you know, I assume they came to you when they were just getting going, and pick out one and tell us where they ended up.
Okay, here's an example. We've had a few that have exited, which are really, really exciting. When we invest into a company today with the Growth Factory, it's all about, basically it's this pool of capital that we invest into, and then ultimately they end up selling, right? It's not really building a cash flow type business. So we've invested into a number. One that comes to mind, I invested into prior to the Growth Factory, and it's called Grin, G-R-I-N, and it's an influencer marketing platform. Basically, it matches influencers, people who are famous online, maybe have a big Instagram following or YouTube, and with major brands that need to use influencers to help promote their product. And Grin has blown up right here in Sacramento, and they were valued, you know, a few million dollars when I, you know, entered the picture, but a year or two ago, they were valued at close to $1 billion and got outside venture capital into our region, right? And at a much higher valuation, which created wealth for a number of people, but it also helps create a lot of jobs right here in Sacramento. So when a company succeeds here in Sacramento, it creates all kinds of great things, including wealth, including jobs, but also the people that work at these companies, they develop confidence. And many, many times, the early employees from these companies that are successful, they go on to start their own company. So like this success breeds success.
Are you kidding me? A $1 billion valuation on someone who links up influencers with companies looking for influencers. Is that what I just heard?
Yes.
That is fantastic.
Fantastic. And the founder is... The founder is Brandon Brown and his partner, Brian Meacham. They went to Folsom High School, our local guys. They're in their 30s, and they're killing it.
Are they still based here locally, Mark?
Yeah, they're based in I think, Old Sacramento now.
Oh, man, that is great. And that's just one company that Mark has put into the Growth Factory and watched it emerge years later, a completely different entity.
Yeah, and just to clarify on that, I invested into them personally prior to the Growth Factory. The Growth Factory's only been around a couple of years.
Oh, gotcha.
The Growth Factory's already invested into 50 companies thus far, though, in the last little over 2 years. That was one of my earlier portfolio companies that's had a little bit more of a chance to mature and you know, have some real success.
All right, we're going to talk more with Mark Haney about a family compound he's building, about perceptions of capitalism and how we change those. He is the entrepreneur's evangelist in the Sacramento area, Mark Haney of the Growth Factory on Bite Size Finance, Buy Sci-Fi as we call it, every 3 o'clock every Sunday on KFBK or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you have a financial plan for your pets? Protecting your loved ones, both two- and four-legged, is important, and the Sacramento SPCA can help. Join us for a complimentary estate planning seminar and learn how you can provide for your family and your pets while also creating a lifeline for animals in need. Visit sspca.org/estate to view seminar dates and secure your spot for one of our upcoming virtual sessions. That's sspca.org/estate.
I'm Kelly Brothers of Cap Trust, and I get the question a lot. How do you pick an advisor that is right for you? I always suggest interview a few people. Go talk to a few people. The truth is, most people will spend more time planning their next weekend getaway than they will actually finding the advisor that is right for them, their family, the next generation, an advisor that may serve you for decades or a generation or more. It's an important decision. Sit down and talk to people. See if you feel comfortable talking to people. After all, this is all about the conversation, mitigating risks, and preparing for the future. Cap Trust, here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. Back again on Bite Size Finance, Kelly Brothers alongside Mark Haney of The Growth Factory. He is the entrepreneur's entrepreneur. If you ever want to have any questions about entrepreneurship or how you go, where you go, what you do. I mean, this guy should be teaching a course. I know he has taught courses in the past too, so we should talk about that at some point as well. Mark, I want to start off with a big question because you see these companies, many of them, you just told us about the company that, you know, used to have a be worth less than $1 million. Now it's worth $1 billion and it's a local company. And we see those and we hear about them and the public hears about some of that. But the public never hears about the entrepreneurs who, with all good intentions and tried to do the right thing, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work out, right? I mean, there for every one that hits, goes from a million to a billion, there are probably 8 or 10 that fail, correct? Or at least
that's correct. Yeah, there's a lot that fail without question, especially when we go into some of these high growth tech type companies. There's a little more risk associated with that than maybe opening up, you know, going off and starting a construction company and you've already been swinging a hammer for 20 years. There's not as much risk in that, although there is risk.
Absolutely. But it just occurs to me that I'm not sure the general public really appreciates the failure rate and why we as a country and an economy need people to take risk, need people to come up with new ideas. I mean, that's what drives our economy forward. And I really, as you point out, I don't think these entrepreneurs, these capitalists get the credit they sometimes deserve. All people see is the ones who make it huge and say, oh, they should be giving more back, which is bunk most of the time as well. But they never see the folks who put heart and soul into an endeavor that for whatever reason just didn't work out. I mean, that's the downside.
Yeah. Entrepreneurs solve the world's biggest problems. You think about what was happening before the airplane, and the Wright brothers tried and failed and tried and failed. Then ultimately they figured out a way to get something to fly. And many of the great changes that we've got in America, we sort of take for granted, like they've always been there, but they were created by entrepreneurs taking these risks, and with a high failure rate, they still took the risks, and it's really made things better for all of us.
No, you're right. And we are the beneficiaries of the blood, sweat, and toil of others in the past. So run through the components again of the growth factory. So you have venture capital, you have that part. I assume you have some consulting piece to it as well, right? What else?
Yeah, we have an entrepreneurial development organization. So we work with to basically help municipalities and corporations to think more innovatively and to really drive the idea of entrepreneurship. So it's not all high growth tech companies, it's small business. We actually work with high schools to help them implement their entrepreneurial programs and universities as well. So we operate in that space, trying to drive entrepreneurship and innovation and that kind of thinking throughout our region. And so that's a part of what we do. And then the venture capital part is really complementary, because some of these companies, even the ones that come out of some of these programs that we do, end up being venture backable, which means they're attractive enough where a venture capitalist will actually put money into those companies. And when they start getting backed by venture, then they've increased their chances of scaling at that point. And ultimately, the goal of the companies that we invest into, we're investing into very early stage companies. So we provide some of that early funding, and then we attract other people's money into our town, other venture capital money into our town. Customer money from around the world comes into Sacramento just because, you know, it was launched here and created the opportunity here, but the money comes from all over the place. It's the perfect scheme. The Silicon Valley and the Bay Area has done a great job of attracting money from all over the world into their tech companies, but Sacramento hasn't done that as well up to this point. But we are turning the corner.
It's interesting listening to Barry Broom at Greater Sacramento, because he's trying to recast Silicon Valley as including Sacramento, that we're the value priced corner of Silicon Valley, and it's working. And I think it'll continue to work, which is exciting to see. So I wanted to ask you about your devotion and love for veterans. Where did that come from? Because I know you're very active in a number of great causes that aid our veterans.
Yeah, I started off helping the Wounded Warrior Project in 2011, after selling my companies. What am I going to do with my life? That kind of thing. And I wanted to help entrepreneurs for sure, but my son was serving in the Marine Corps, so I was helping wounded warriors down in San Diego. And I remember in San Diego, you've got all these people there's Balboa Hospital there. And so I'm down there playing wheelchair basketball with people that have lost their limbs. And so we began helping them through our organization. And my son was in Afghanistan at that time. And next thing you know, my son gets shot in the leg in Afghanistan and ends up going through multiple surgeries and ends up where I was 2 weeks earlier at Balboa Hospital in San Diego. And so I think his commitment, his sacrifice, the sacrifice of his friends, and, you know, they're like second children to my wife and I, they made us think to ourselves, what can we do, right? We have people out there risking their lives for America. And so we have to ask ourselves, what can we do? And so we have a company, an organization called Allegiant Vets, which my son Marcus oversees. And right now we help, there aren't as many wounded vets happening today. So we've kind of stopped helping, or we've kind of cut back on our helping of the wounded vets. And we're now helping veterans right before they transition out of the military to transition out successfully.
How's your son's health?
My son's health is great. He's shot in the thigh and he's good to go. He's, you know, coaches and can run. He was an athletic kid. He's still athletic and does coaching. So he's still doing well, or he's doing well. But I think he's really doing well because his organization, Allegiant Vets, our family organization, is doing well. We have the largest skill bridge program in the country. We have, I think, 1,300 people active at any one time and growing. So these are people that are still in the military. They're getting paid by the military, but they are going through our program just prior to transitioning out. So we're building America's finest workforce. And what ends up happening is when you get off on the right foot, when you get out of the military, you've got so much more confidence. And, you know, we all know that there's a heavy suicide rate in and among veterans. And we want to sort of cut into that a little bit by giving people, you know, the chance to get off on the right foot right off the bat.
What did your son, is he working with you or did he move into some other industry?
No, he's running Allegiant Vets, our organization. So he helped me start my podcast, and he worked for a staffing company. And so he learned a lot about, you know, people that, you know, need to hire, right? People that want to hire, you know, veterans. He specialized in that for a while with a local company. And then began working with us at Allegiant, and he's really cast the vision for the organization and in building Allegiant Vets. And so it's really his vision. He's the CEO of the company. And so I am kind of like the head cheerleader.
No, that's great. And that is so needed. And one of the podcasts we did a few months ago was with Mike Pereira, who started an entire foundation for Battlefields to Ballfields, where he tries to take returning vets and you know, convince them that they want to be a referee on a, in a football game or a basketball game or an umpire in a baseball game. And, you know, and it's working, it's working. It's giving these sports need umps, and returning vets need something like that to kind of re-immerse in a certain community. So kudos to all of you. I mean, we need that, and we're going to continue to need that into the future, I'm sure. Mark, I want to talk to you about, so we hit on the vets. I want to talk to you a little bit about, I'm setting you up here before we take the break, but I want you to think about it, because I want to talk about the compound you're building for your family. I want to hear all about that, because I've heard other families talk about it, never do it, but I've heard other families talk about it. And then secondly, you know, in contrast to that, one of the worst parts of my job is seeing a lot of very good, very productive, very philanthropically minded people leave the state of California. So I'm going to ask you, and I'm not looking for a political answer, but I'm asking you from a business environment standpoint, if you could do one thing to make California, specifically Sacramento, more attractive to entrepreneurs and people starting businesses, what would that one thing be? You're going to have a minute to think about it, though. Kelly Brothers, Bite Size Finance, along with Mark Haney, The Growth Factory, every Sunday, 3 o'clock on KFBK or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Marcel Plumpto with Cap Trust in our Roseville office. I specialize in providing retirement plan advisory services to corporate fiduciaries. While we focus on many areas such as investment management and vendor oversight, it's our dedication to working closely with participants that drives my passion for the industry. Without a high level of engagement between advisors and participants, even well-designed retirement plans can fall short of their objectives. Should you have any questions on your retirement plan, please reach out. Marcel Plumpto at CapTrust.com.
I'm Father Christopher Calderon. I serve as the president of Cristo Rey High School, a work-study school. As we partner with businesses all throughout Sacramento, we want to take a moment to hear from our students as they share their experience.
Hi, my name is Ramon Corona, and I work for McCarthy Building Companies, and I've enjoyed the progression that I've had in learning the entire industry and getting a taste of each of the departments. Thank you, McCarthy Building Companies, for sponsoring our school.
Thank you again to all our work-study sponsors for believing in and being a part of the work we do.
Hello, this is Will Gabry, and I am an advisor with CapTrust here in the Sacramento area. I'm a busy father of four, and life comes at us fast. As my 20th year of advising clients begin, I want to take a moment and reflect on why I'm thankful to have chosen this profession. Quite simply, I get to help people. I work with clients on wealth management, income, and taxes, to name a few. But even more importantly, I get to be part of great relationships. People often interact with an advisor during life events, and I've been with clients through difficulties and joyous times. Conversations, connections, and trust built mean more to me than anything else. Working at a nationwide firm like CapTrust gives me a team of professionals to assist in all aspects of financial advising. Being part of our local office means great care and service to our clients. If you would like to start a discussion and see how we can partner with you, you can find me at CapTrust.com. Look for Will Gabry, G-A-B-R-I. Thank you.
Back again, Mark Haney of The Growth Factory, and woo, I have thrown the gauntlet at his feet here, talking about, because this is a man who's given everything to this region, who has tried to build here, who has tried to keep other entrepreneurs here. He truly believes and loves his part of the world, which for the most part is Placer County, Loomis, Rockland, Roseville, the metro Sacramento area. And I just threw out the contrast of all the very good, productive citizens, philanthropically minded citizens who have been leaving the state for a variety of reasons. But I asked Mark, with that in mind, is there any one thing you would do to change the business environment in California? Mark, what say ye?
Yeah, I do think that we need to create an advantage for Sacramento. And so that's actually what we're working on. And everything I do in my world is about creating some kind of advantage or competitive edge. And I also think that we need to have a compelling vision for who we want to be and what we want to become. And so I think we need to think a little bit fantastical, if you will, in the way that we describe where we want to go so that it's attractive to people. So the backyard advantage that we're building here in Sacramento is the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, right? Helping one another. I talked about that, but it's actually happening. And so if there's one thing that I could do to work on in order to keep people from leaving Sacramento, it would be, first of all, I would say, if you want to leave, leave, right? If you're leaving for your own reasons, fine. But those of us that want to stay here, we can't sit there as armchair quarterbacks and poke holes in everything. We have to get involved. And so this platform, this Backyard Advantage, it really is a place where anybody can help. Anybody can show some love to small business and the entrepreneurial community. Jump in, help open some doors for other entrepreneurs or for entrepreneurs. And it's this mindset of helping one another, a show of love, if you will. And so I think Sacramento could be known for that. On one of your earlier podcasts, one of your guests talked about this feeling like a Midwest sort of community, because we have great people here in the Sacramento region. And I think we have the capacity to come together in a way that is really different and create a culture of love around small business and entrepreneurship. And again, with Barry Broom's help, with Lokesh from Moneta's help, with Dale Carlson's help, who built the Sleep Train, people like them and us and the people that are working together collaboratively versus in silos, it's beginning to happen. And I think we have to jump on that bandwagon and make it happen. So don't sit on the sidelines and complain. If you're going to be that guy, maybe you should leave. If you otherwise, get involved.
Yeah, Dale not only built the Sleep Train, he funded this fantastic entrepreneurship academy at Sac State. I mean, it's an incredible program that they're nurturing some of the people who I assume will just, as a natural course, meld their way into the growth factory, right? I mean, that's just kind of a natural course.
100%. I've been on the advisory board since its inception of the Carlson Center. I'm an investor into Moneta. And then I work with Barry Broom a lot. So some of the people that you've mentioned, those were actually the first three calls that I made. And so if you're a listener out there thinking about how do I get into this, way of thinking, with this way of helping, this pay it forward mentality, you can start with this one question. And the first three people I called were Dale, Barry, and Lokesh. And each of them said the same thing to me. What are you working on, Mark? How can I help? What are you working on? How can I help? And if we can begin every conversation with that attitude, with that question, then that's showing some love. It's basically saying, I love you. How do I help you? Right? And that's what they said to me. It's the kind of people that are here in Sacramento. And if you're one of those kind of people, then you need to start asking that question.
Yeah, no, you're right. And those are three of the best in town at supporting and lending a hand whenever they can. So tell us about the compound you're building. I want to hear about this, Mark, because I've heard other people saying, we're going to build a family compound. So tell me about yours. I want to hear about it.
Again, the fantastical way of thinking. We're building the most magical place on earth outside Disneyland, 74 acres in the heart of Loomis. My two children and their spouses, along with my 9 grandkids, live out there, along with my wife, Stacy, and I. So when I open my gigantic sliding glass door, what I see is this several football field type of environment where grandkids are out there playing, and it's, everybody loves each other, and it's cousins, playing football and volleyball and all these other things with one another. And so that's it in a nutshell. And we call it Haneyville because it's the original winery of Placer County from in the 30s. And we had to tear down this winery because it was dilapidated, but it looked like a town, right? It looked like a town. So one of my teammates said, Mark, you should start. We gave it the code name or the project name Haneyville because my last name is Haney. And so now that's it. And we're rebuilding the winery facade building, if you will, to look like a town with multiple storefronts. We're in the process of building that right now. And it's magical because of that and that concept, but it's got this pond and zip line and tree forts and creeks running through it and dogs. I don't know how many dogs we all have with all the families. It's like, what? This is right here. Somebody's actually doing this. So anytime I share the story, it's like, nobody does that. I'm doing it.
Good for you, man. Very rare. The last time I saw it was, this is years ago, probably 20 years ago. I happened to be down at Alex Spanos's house on a Sunday. And that's another story I could tell you about because it had to do with the freedom flights for the World War II vets, but that we were put together thanks to the generosity of Alex Spanos. But I remember it was Sunday and suddenly all the family showing up, all the kids, all the grandkids for Sunday dinner. And they all did that. And then Monday they all took off and went out to all their projects all over the Western U.S. Obviously the kids went to school, but they all went out and did their thing in L.A. and Dallas and Phoenix, wherever they were building apartment houses. And then they all flew back by Wednesday night and they had another family dinner. I can't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday night. So there were two of them, one at the beginning of the work week and one kind of after they all did what they were doing. And it was a very cool setup because they were all together. And that, I mean, there's nothing better than a strong family.
No, it's, you know? I like to say all great change in America, this is a Ronald Reagan quote, all great change in America begins at the dinner table. And so we had dinner the other night and my wife and I are learning how to line dance right now as kind of a hobby type thing. And so we taught the grandkids how to line dance and my kids already knew how. So the whole family, there's like 15 of us, we're all out there line dancing in our family room. And you know, it's how, and you're just laughing and having a good time. That's what, I mean, we have to build from the inside out, our family, our friends, our community, America. You know, so many times we look to, you know, cast blame or, you know, maybe look outside of what's really important and what we really have influence over. And we forget about our family and, you know, right here at home, you can change anything.
No, you can. And it all starts with the family. And it is, I mean, it's the greatest governance structure ever devised, the nuclear family. And I think Vivek Ramaswamy is correct when he says true privilege in this country is growing up with two parents with a focus on education. If you've got that, you are miles ahead of much of the population. That's the privilege. And I was lucky to have that, like I'm sure you did as well. Yeah. By the way, yeah. I was next to your wife at a recent concert, and I don't need to tell you, she can dance. I'm just saying, I think it was Madonna recently at Golden.
She said she saw you. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Our seats are right next to your guys'. So it's perfect. You get to see each other once in a while that way.
And I don't usually see you dancing. Of course, I usually see you there during games, but this happened to be a concert and she can dance. So if there's a weak link in your dancing, I think it's you. I don't mind telling you.
That is true.
Hey, before we wrap things up, any final comments, any words of encouragement, anything you would say to entrepreneurs or won't even describe themselves as entrepreneurs yet, but they have an idea?
The one thing I would say is nobody builds a truly great company alone. Nobody builds a truly great life alone. Kelly, you had a tremendous amount of success in your world. And if you put the right people around you, your chances of succeeding are so much better. You've got Jeff helping you with the podcast and you put the right people with you, the chances of succeeding are so much better. And if you have an idea, I would seek out those people and begin sharing that idea. Don't keep it to yourself. Share your idea. And the next thing you know, the right person is going to creep into your life in one way or another. If it's the right kind of idea, if you've got the most compelling enough vision, the right people will somehow magically come into your life. So don't do it alone and share your idea.
You know, I think you're right. I'm on the board at Jesuit High School. And so I was there for back to school nights. And I remember the president, Chris Alling, standing up and saying, you know, he tells the kids, hey, show me your friends. I'll show you your future. And that's not just true for 14, 16-year-olds. That is true if you're going to be an entrepreneur or going to be successful in life. You need to surround yourself with people who think the way you do or the people who think the way you aspire to think. You know, and I think sometimes we lose sight of that you do. You have to put yourself in their presence in order to have that rub off. And that's true whether you want to be an entrepreneur or that's true if you just want to work out and lose 20 pounds. It's all a mindset, and you need people in the same mindset around you. Mark Haney, can't thank you enough, my friend.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Mark Haney, Growth Factory, today's guest on Bite Size Finance. Want to thank him so much for his time, for his enthusiasm, and for his advocacy for all that is good about living and working in Northern California. Coming up next week on Bite Size Finance, 3 o'clock every Sunday here on KFBK or wherever you find your podcasts, Tim Cullum. Is he one of the great real estate agents in the area? Is he one of the great artists in the area? Or could he be both? Tim Cullum on the next Bite Size Finance. Thanks for listening to Buy Sci-Fi Bite Size Finance. If you liked what we served up today, please give us your rating, subscribe, and by all means, share. Music for the show produced locally by Kitty O'Neill and her band Skylar's Pool.
Under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, this podcast is defined as an advertisement and includes an uncompensated testimonial by a Cap Trust client. Please be advised that clients' experiences as described in this podcast do not necessarily represent the experience of other clients. The discussions and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and are subject to change without notice. This podcast is intended to be informational only. Nothing in this podcast constitutes a solicitation, investment advice, or recommendation to invest in any securities. Cap Trust Financial Advisors is an investment advisor registered under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. Cap Trust does not render legal advice. Thanks again for listening to Bite Sized Finance.
Kelly Brothers here for Cap Trust. We are fiduciaries. That's an interesting word. What does that mean? That means that legally we are obligated to put your best interests over our own. Non-fiduciaries don't have that same legal situation. They can sell you something as long as it's suitable, but they don't have to put you in the best thing for you over their best interest. In other words, they can't just sell you a nice annuity with a big fat commission for themselves, even if it's not the best thing for you. We are fiduciaries. We are proud to be fiduciaries. And let me say something too about price. I am always shocked by the fact that there are people who I know will scour the internet for the cheapest flight or the cheapest ticket to a ball game, but they have no idea what they are paying for their advisor. We tell you up front in black and white, here's what you're paying for what you're getting. Cap Trust here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom.